Hello and welcome to the Radio Thrift Shop. I'm your proprietor, DJ Frederick. Now, if you've been listening to Radio Thrift Shop on low-power FM stations and non-commercial stations, you'll know that we feature a flexible format and we're an homage to the underground era of broadcasting from the 1970s, and that's the era that I grew up in. All right, sometimes we have themes, and I think today I'm going to play some privately released music for you from the past century of recorded sound, and then we're going to hear a mini-documentary from 99% Invisible, something that I never have to deal with non-commercial radio, the broadcast clock. All right, let's drop the needle and hear some music.
Thank you. start. This light had gone out long ago. The longer I live, the farther I find I've gotta go. Through cheating girls and tripping thrills, I know I've lost a good part of my life. But I'll do it again, as will most men. I keep on till I die. Now I'm sitting in my one-man room, one day at a time. Think about the time that's passed and a good old friend of mine. We're at 'em hard at every bar on the line. Now it's all done, but we put some memories in our minds. And it was worth everything we went through. And it was worth everything we went through. There's been a time when life's been too good to lose, but I surely know that I'm always free to choose. Then the times when I'm up and the ones when I'm down keep changing every day, but never go, they're always around. And it was worth everything we went through. It was worth everything we went through.
I had a woodland house, the littlest ever seen, with funny little redwood walls and roof of mossy green. I'd have a stove to feed and warm my children small and sweet. They'd sleep on beds of gingerbread tucked in with taffy sheets.
Kevin Fisher from his privately released LP, The First of Fisher, and that's A House for Wendy. Before that, we heard F.J. McMahon and the title track to his 1969 LP, The Spirit of the Golden Juice, and we started out with the voice of Seven Woods and a tune called The Firefly Dusk. Well, I'm DJ Frederick. We're surveying privately released music during this edition of the Radio Thrift Shop. And coming up later, we're going to have a mini documentary called The Broadcast Clock. And that old clock on the wall says it's time for Science and the Sea.
Exploring Science and the Sea. Adélie penguins live in one of the iciest regions on Earth, on the rim of Antarctica. But when the ice around one colony thinned out a few years ago, the penguins flourished. The adults grew fatter, and the chicks were more likely to survive. Adélies are among the smallest penguins in Antarctica. A typical adult is up to a couple of feet tall and weighs about 10 to 12 pounds. They're also the most common penguins on the continent. They form colonies of thousands of birds all around it. During four summers, researchers studied a colony on a bay in East Antarctica. They taped instruments to 175 penguins. The packages included video cameras, GPS trackers, and instruments for measuring the penguins' motions. Three of the summers stayed icy, but during the fourth, the bay was fairly ice-free. open water came up to the penguins' nesting grounds. So instead of walking a long way across the ice until they found a crack, the birds could plunge straight into the water to hunt for food. Penguins are much better swimmers than walkers, so they spent fewer hours moving, a big energy savings. And they caught more krill, tiny shrimp-like organisms that are the mainstay of their diet. So the average adult was about 10% heavier than during icier years. Chicks grew much faster, and a greater percentage of them survived. No one is sure how the changing climate will affect the adelie population over the long term, but for at least one group, a lack of ice turned one summer into a beach party. For the University of Texas Marine Science Institute, I'm Holly Brawley.
Such a lonely wave to ride on.
beautiful music by a band known as Moonstone from 1973. The track is called Focus, and that album was recorded in Montreal, and it features Carolyn McLeod on vocals, guitar, and piano, Randy Price on acoustic guitar, electric guitar, Michael Heath on vocals, 12-string guitars, and piano, and David Bass on bass, Francis Path on flute. Beautiful music. And before that, New Hampshire's own Pat Wells, a song called Fisherman. And Pat is the pastor now of a Methodist church right down the road here in Contucook, New Hampshire. Well, I'm DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop. I'm here every Saturday evening at 10 p.m. on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London, and heard around the world online at classicalwscs.org and archived at radioforall.net. We're surveying privately released music, but I think we're going to have a little documentary now from 99% Invisible, The Broadcast Clock. A little peek behind the scenes of the world of radio.
This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars.
Ready, open on Roman. Open. Go.
When I'm not making radio, I listen to a lot of radio. More than most people can imagine.
Set a down clock for 4:30, please.
My earbuds are constantly lodged in my ears so that I can press play and listen to radio at any moment that doesn't require me to talk or listen to an actual human being in the real world.
All right, well, now is the moment in our show where we endorse
Management Oversight by Tori Malatia.
Audio newspaper for a visual world.
George! AnswerMeThisPodcast.com.
The show's produced by speaking into microphones.
Hello, it's Jason Isaacs.
Stand by to open Julia.
Whether I'm walking on secret stairs or doing the dishes.
Open.
Or driving the car.
You're there, but you're somewhere else, too.
We producers aspire to create driveway moments, TM. Stories so good that listeners can't leave their car until they're over.
I think part of what makes a driveway moment is the end of that moment, when you realize what time it is. You could have been staring at a clock all along, but for a while, for once, it had no power over you.
That time distortion field is one of public radio's secret awesome powers, which is why it is such a shock when those of us go from being radio listeners to radio producers, like me and my friend Julia Barton here. The audience is hearing this.
It's hard to believe he's not nervous.
But this is what radio sounds like on the inside.
I'm 32 seconds short of what I'm supposed to have.
It's only Monday.
So what I'll do is I'll just play 15 seconds of this song. And then while we play this 15 seconds, you will...
I visited NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C. and sat in on the live roll of All Things Considered, their flagship afternoon news magazine show. There are clocks all over the studios, big red digital clocks, huge round analog clocks, special software and calculators.
Time calculators, where 60 plus 60 equals 200.
Hi.
Matt, Brandon wanted me only to play 15 seconds, but you wrapped up 45 seconds earlier, so now I have to play a long time. Is it okay?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a choice, really. Do we have enough to dead roll it?
I don't think so.
Monica Estativia directs All Things Considered 4 days a week. To me, it's the scariest job in the world.
That fear is built into the design of a program like All Things Considered. It's the show clock. The show has a set clock. It's a template from which it almost never varies. Every show that broadcasts or aspires to broadcast in the public radio system has a clock. Basically, it looks like a pie. It's round and it's sliced in lots of weird ways. Some of the slices are very thin. There's 59 seconds for the program opening. We call that the billboard. 14 seconds for the funding credits. A fatter slice is 5 minutes for the newscast. The biggest slices are lettered A, B, C, and D, and they are the segments. That's where the stories and interviews live, and they have to fit together.
1 minute to close.
I remember I was very scared of the clock. It took me years to figure it out completely.
The clock is your master for the 2 hours the show rolls out. Everything has to be ready. Segments can't run long by even a second, because most of the local stations are automated to cut off the national program where the clock says they can. These times are called posts. You have to hit the post. Nothing can go wrong.
But of course, things go wrong every day. Someone reads too long, an interview runs too short. You might hear the dreaded dead air. or someone rushing to hit the post.
Then listeners can hear the clock. He who can't be named in public radio.
And then the spell is broken.
When you look at this document, you see something very regimented, and we've talked about how it is very regimented in terms of things happening at a particular second. But the goal is for people not to really know it's there.
That's Greg Dixon, who also directs All Things Considered. But like most show directors, he never actually looks at the diagram of the program clock.
This visual representation was hard for me to reference quickly. I had a piece of paper where I lined out every single time when things started and how long they were going to be. It was my cheat sheet, and I brought it into the studio every day.
And according to Greg Dixon, he brought it in much longer than he actually needed it.
Until it was in tatters. But those crib sheets, and you will find them everywhere in broadcast, are a bridge to the place where the clock actually lives.
You can wake us up in the middle of the night, and we can be like 59, 5, 28, 12, 28, 128, like 7:48. We know we can go down the entire hour without ever stopping, because we know it by heart. And of course, we had dreams about it.
At NPR, they're called director's dreams.
You lose control. You cannot regain back control, and you have lost sense of how much time is left in the segment, how much time is left for that piece, and usually it's like the worst panic attack. And you wake up and you're sweating, and you can't believe you just had another director's dream.
I've had those where I'm on the board announcing Morning Edition on KALW, and the sliders don't do anything. And the buttons just don't look right. And so rather than try anything, I'm just paralyzed with fear.
Oh, yeah. In my dream, I'm doing a newscast with no copy. And I just have to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk like an idiot until the clock goes down. And I haven't even seen a down clock in ages.
Now, with podcasts, there is no time scarcity, no interlocking gears of local and national broadcasts. And that changes everything. But we also make a version of this show that fits inside the NPR clock, the C segment of Morning Edition, to be exact. 4 minutes and 30 seconds exactly.
Over by 1:43.
So I'm going to have to figure out a way to take all of these ideas, or at least some fraction of these ideas, and cram them into a show that's less than 5 minutes. And sometimes that really, really sucks. But you'd be surprised how often I actually really like the brief radio version of this program. The first time I really internalized the difference between doing radio and doing podcasts was when people would tell me that they wanted my stories to be longer. In the entire decade of radio I produced prior to this podcast, no editor has ever asked me to go longer.
Yeah, and I was your editor, Roman, and I can vouch for that.
You were so mean to me.
I was so mean, 4:30 sucker.
But podcasts have no constraints. You can be any length. The only constraint is the content. And people always tell me they wish this podcast was longer, but I think the show would suffer if it went on too long. And so maybe there's a need for a clock, even if the clock isn't strictly required. Constraint, or maybe just restraint in this case, makes for better art.
When I started thinking about the broadcast clock as a piece of design, I wondered how it all got started in public radio. NPR came together in the late 60s and the early 70s when network news was king. And those broadcast shows, of course, had a clock.
But public radio news wanted to be something different because of this guy.
I'm Bill Siemering, and I was the first director of programming for NPR.
Bill Siemering!
Bill Siemering. He came up with the whole idea of All Things Considered, which, of course, everyone in the business now refers to as ATC.
In the original mission statement, ATC was called a daily identifiable product.
But you decided that wouldn't be a good name for the show going forward.
Right.
Bill Siemering was among the earliest designers of the public radio sound. That sound included lots of audio and voices from the world outside the studio, and it called for a documentary-style approach, even to same-day news. For that, Bill designed a very open clock.
We didn't have a lot of breaks throughout it, and it was this frustrated some people because they thought they wanted a very fixed clock. There was a clock, but it was not that tight. It was tight where we had joins with the stations, but otherwise it was not. And I think that's one of the things that made it interesting to listen to, because it wasn't predictable that way. And you let the stories were leading the length of the piece.
The old ATC clock only had a few slices and a lot of open space. In there, one story might be 2 minutes, followed by another that was 20 minutes. It was open. It was kind of like a podcast.
But as Bill was saying there, not everyone appreciated that.
There was a conference 2 weeks after ATC rolled out, and the station managers just called Bill Siemering to the carpet for his fluffy, loose-sounding program. And there was something else that they really didn't like. And this is a digression here, but this is a podcast, so we get to have digressions.
And of course, I got this criticism from some about women's voices and all that stuff, that on FM, women's voices have the high frequencies, and you know, you should see the meter, Bill, when women's voices come on and that kind of thing.
Really? They said women's voices were too high for FM?
Yeah, that some voices would peak the meter too.
Oh my God!
The upshot, Bill Siemering was out of NPR a year and a half later. And in the years that followed, the NPR clock began a long process of becoming more subdivided. The women he hired, like Linda Wertheimer and Susan Sandberg, are well known. Siemering went on to help turn Fresh Air with Terry Gross into a national program, and he's the kind of the patron saint of creative, open-style public radio, including this program right here.
But, you know, being loose and open can also be its own form of pain.
People often mention to me, you know, the boy, those were the halcyon days of All Things Considered, and I was there. No, they weren't.
That's Neil Conan, who's done everything at NPR, including until recently, hosting the two-hour live call-in program Talk of the Nation.
Neil Conan loves the clock. For him, it's an art form unto itself.
There's these little things that, if you've never done it, are impossible. If you've done it forever, you don't even think about doing them. You know, how long is 5 seconds? 5 seconds is a long time. You can ID 3 guests and say goodbye in 5 seconds.
So it's not surprising that when Neil Conan took over Talk of the Nation, he added more time elements, more posts.
Because it turns out you've said pretty much all you need to say about medical marijuana by the 40, and you should go on and do something else.
Unfortunately, Neil Conan is doing something else now. NPR recently canceled Talk of the Nation after 21 years, and he resigned.
Neil Conan says artificial constraints make us better. And I know this as a person who edits audio stories. We lose perspective when we're inside the story, just trying to make sense of all our reporting. We can't tell what's important anymore. If we don't have any constraints, we can make boring and confusing stuff. The constraint doesn't have to be a time limit, but at least the clock forces us to have a perspective. It says stop right there and figure out what really matters.
Of course, the clock can also limit what you say, as we'll have to do in the broadcast version of this piece. Or it can create nonsense where you suddenly have to fill time you didn't expect to fill.
So there was a day long ago when Neil Conan was not master of the clock. When he first started at NPR in the late 70s, he had to direct this new show called Weekend All Things Considered.
I was being briefed on the clock by the then director of Weekend All Things Considered, Deborah Amos, who's gone on to some renown as a reporter. And my question to her was, "You mean exactly to time?" And I think we ended that first show that I produced about 4 minutes early. I was so terrified of blowing the post.
So a while ago, I went to hear Deborah Amos speak. And afterwards, I asked her if this story was true, that Neil Conan ended his first live NPR show 4 minutes early. And she said they did. And that they had to grab the longest film music they could find in the studio, which was some kind of whale song.
No super designed, subdivided format is telling us when to stop this story. We're just kind of winging it. But you know, people in radio are always kind of winging it. Whether you're in a studio shed like mine, where I don't even think I have a clock in this room at all, except for what's on the computer, or you're in the broadcast palace in DC with clocks everywhere.
Okay, we had to do some adjustments, but we're good. Melissa, you have the line.
We just hope someone out there is listening.
Okay, see, disaster avoided. Yeah, she finished 45 seconds earlier.
But they're not listening hard enough to hear the clock monster that haunts the dreams of anyone who's looked into its dark soul.
Yeah, stand by. Ready. Open. Under.
All Things Considered continues in a moment.
Take her out. Ready. Hit break.
At the third stroke, It will be 2:43 precisely.
Cleaners from Venus with Wivenhoe Bells. Before that, we heard the High Llamas with a cover version of Nick Drake's At the Chime of a City Clock. Well, I'm DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop, homegrown, homemade radio for the rest of us.
Celebrating 3 decades of Pulse of the Planet, here's a program from our archives.
Did
Take a moment now, if you can, and let the sounds that you're about to hear transport you to the wilderness of the Pacific Northwest. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is The Pulse of the Planet. It's late afternoon at a remote mountain lake. Songbirds chorus in the distance. Insects are swarming near the surface of the water, and the trout rise up to feed on them. Not a fish can leap or an insect fall on the pond, but it is thus reported in circling dimples, in lines of beauty. Nothing so fair, so pure, and at the same time so large as a lake lies on the surface of the earth. It is a mirror which no stone can crack. The words are from Henry David Thoreau. Sounds from Gordon Hempton.
This archival program is part of our 30th anniversary celebration. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is The Pulse of the Planet.
Metzdorf, sounding a lot like Neil Young there, Signs of Seasons. Well, I'm DJ Frederick, and you have been exploring the Radio Thrift Shop. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to find an archive of this program, it will be on radioforall.net. That's radio, the number for all.net. And it is Radio Thrift Shop 540. Going to have Cleaners from Venus take us out with A Corridor of Dreams. Thank you for listening. Wishing you many blessings. And keep dreaming.
It's a messed up club.